Welcome to the Grace-Based Family Podcast.
We're your hosts,
Karis Murray
and Michelle Brook. This is a podcast where we look at the power of grace in the everyday lives of families.
We're excited for you to listen in on the conversation.
Hi, Michelle.
Hey, Karis. How are you?
I'm doing great. We've got a great show today, and we're just so excited to be here with you. We're in studio today with a wonderful guest. But before we talk about that, I just want to remind our listeners that one of the best ways that you can help other people find out about our show is by subscribing. Wherever it is you listen, whether that's Apple Podcasts or across all of the major podcasting platforms, if you subscribe to our show, first of all, you'll find out right away when there's a new show so you can listen. It helps that, you know, algorithm thing that I hear is big on the internet. And then if you would, leave us a review. We really, really appreciate it. Again, it helps other people who might be struggling in similar ways as you and as us to find our show and to find our community. So if you would just like and subscribe, we would really, really appreciate it. So Michelle, why don't you let us know who we're talking to today and what we're talking about?
Yes, we're so excited. Today's interview is long overdue because this is a very busy man.
Yes, he is.
So today we're talking with Dr. Tim Kimmel. So he is the founder and executive director of Grace-Based Families, formerly known as Family Matters, whose goal is to see families transformed by God's grace into instruments of reformation and restoration. Tim develops resources for families and churches. He speaks across the globe on the unique pressures that confront today's families. Not only is Tim a well-known speaker, he has written over 15 books and has starred in many video studies.
For crying out.
Yes, the movie star. Anyway, Tim also happens to be Karis's father and my friend.
He's my daddy.
Yes.
And we all work together at Grace-Based Families, and we get to spend a lot of time with Tim, but he is a busy guy. And I'm going to call him Tim during this interview, but it's just so that it's not weird. But he's my dad, and so it's a pleasure to have him here today.
And Karis was fun to raise.
I bet.
She's
a hoot.
Fun country. I was fun, and then fun is also a euphemism for all those things that fun can mean, right?
Yeah. Busy. Exhausting.
Getting into trouble.
It's why we decided we better figure out what grace is all about. We're going to need this.
She's your muse, right?
I was the muse.
You wrote Grace-Based Parenting.
Exactly. And today, specifically, we're going to talk about marriage. Mm-hmm. We talk a lot about parenting on this podcast, and Michelle and I, you know, we're moms at sort of different stages of our parenting journey. We've got a lot of, you know, in the trenches wisdom with parenting, but we really thought to talk about marriage, we wanted to bring someone in who kind of wrote the book on grace in marriage, and that book is called Grace-Filled Marriage, and that's a resource that we'll put in our show notes that you can look further into if you're interested. But Dad, Tim, I would love to hear, you know, when we get married, I think a lot of people think they're clones of their spouse when they get married.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't under that impression, but, you know, I know a lot of people kind of think, oh, we have so much in common. And then you get married and you find out you maybe don't have quite as much in common as you thought. But, you know, the ways that we're different from our spouse can be beautiful. They're God designed, I think.
Well,
right?
They are.
You know.
But we are. But I think the reason we think we're so similar is because we're trying to win each other's hearts.
Right.
And so the other person, you know, I'm suddenly very interested in long walks on the beach. I would rather have my gums scraped than take a long walk on the beach. But that's what she loved to do. And we lived near the Chesapeake Bay. And so, or just sit there in the pier at sunset and watch it. But then she would get in a duck blind with me up in the middle of the night and very cold. And she hates doing that kind of stuff. But I didn't know that.
Right.
Because we're trying to win each other's hearts. Then we get married. And suddenly, go hunting with you? Why would I do that? Well, because you love it. When did you get that impression? Well, and then take a long walk on the beach. What's the point?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, where are we going? Is there a destination? Can we time ourselves? Can we race somebody? I mean, what's the deal? But that's, you know, they do say opposites attract, and there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
In if I can use an analogy from the Rocky movie, remember when he fell in love with Adrian and, mm-hmm. and his Adrian's brother, Pauly, thought, what do you see in my sister? And she's, well, she's got gaps. And I've got gaps, but together, no gaps. And we're like pieces of puzzle that come together. But that also can create stress.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's where those gaps come together that also the friction lies, right. You know. And so what do you think, Michelle? You know.
Yeah. I mean, I've been married 15 years and some change. And I knew we were different coming into it. I just didn't realize how completely different,
right.
Like in everything. I'm scheduled. Times are kind of a suggestion
for my husband.
I love a calendar. He's never kept a calendar. I like to be early. He's late. I am risk adverse. He loves taking risks. So it's kind of funny when you look at like the day to day, like I clean the dishes as I cook. The kitchen looks like a bomb went off mm-hmm. when my husband when cooks something. So it's like at first you're like, oh my gosh, we're very different. But the longer you go, I think sometimes you start to really resent those differences mm-hmm. and not appreciate them. So that's why I'm excited to talk about it with you today for our listeners, for how can you allow grace to fill in those gaps when there's such huge differences in how people approach life.
Well, what you just described, the difference between you and Mike is mm-hmm. You were just describing Darcy and me. You are mm-hmm. just like her.
Right. No, you guys are. Yeah. It's very similar.
Yeah. And I'm a ready, shoot, aim type of guy. Mm-hmm. And she's a ready, aim. Yeah. And, you know, she likes to be at the, she wants to be at the ticket counter at least an hour and 45 minutes before the plane were to leave. I prefer once they're starting to pressurize the cabin. You know,
I know I've traveled with you, and it gives me a little bit of
we all have. As two people who've traveled with you, we know.
It's making my blood pressure rise right now.
You like to make a rock star entrance onto the plane at the very end.
Well,
don't waste any time because you like to do fun stuff up until the very last minute. You
You're
know?
Exploring the city, going to museums.
But those things, I think it's very, very normal for that to become something that's cute and clever when you're falling in love and very annoying afterwards. Mm-hmm. And it can be more than annoying. It can become a point of just deep resentment. Mm-hmm. You know, I early on in our marriage, I'd gone to bed early. She came into bed and I'm already deep asleep. And then she snuggles up to, did you lock the front door? And I'm thinking, it doesn't take a postgraduate degree to figure out how to turn the lever and lock the door.
Yeah.
You know, anybody can do this. You just turn it.
Yeah.
And I decided to explain, it's not hard. You just turn it towards the jamb. And then it's quiet. My father always locked the door. So she was getting married mm-hmm. thinking whoever this guy is, he's responsible to make sure that I'm mm-hmm. safe. And I'm thinking, well, call your dad and see if he'll come over and lock our doors. This is nuts. I'm asleep. Well, once again, it's the lens we look through. And if we're looking at the lens through what's wrong with them, you will find a ton of things wrong with your spouse. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think we tend to look through lenses that see ourselves a whole lot more favorably, even when we can be the nightmare. That's why God's grace has to come to the rescue, because it's not our default mode.
No.
To look at anything other than through selfish eyes.
Well, and it's interesting. I know, even as somebody who grew up, mm-hmm. you know, with you and Mom as my examples and working in this ministry, every resource available to me, I know it is easier for me to give grace to just about anybody else than it is to Mike, my spouse.
Exactly.
Because I don't know. I don't know why it's mm-hmm. it's harder, but, you know, I can give grace to my kids. I can give grace to my neighbors. I can give grace to my parents, my coworkers, my siblings. And it's just absolute hardest with your spouse.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but that's why it's so vital.
But don't you think marriage is probably the ultimate test kitchen for applied grace.
Yes.
If you can win the battle here, the other stuff is going to be a lot easier.
Yeah.
We risk it all on our wedding day. We're handing the whole life over to each other to do a lot of good or a lot of destruction with. Mm. But also, maybe we're taking advantage of the vows to the relationship saying, well, what are they going to, you know, we're married. They've got to put up with me. There's a lot of reasons, but regardless, we need grace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do.
How would you define grace in marriage? Like what, when you say grace, I feel like sometimes people can confuse that with, what does that mean? Nice, just forgiving? Mm-hmm. How would you define grace in marriage?
I'm glad you've asked that question because that is the standard, I think, confusion. When we start talking about grace, it's easy to think that we're talking about just being nice to people all the time, letting them get away with whatever, just ignoring their stuff. That is not what God does with us, and yet he deals with us in grace all the time. Grace, more than anything else, let me give you a couple analogies. It's equilibrium. It is creating a comfortable, a workable culture to work through all of our dangerous issues with. The standard one we use here at the ministry is giving people something they desperately need but don't necessarily deserve. For instance, let's take the worst case. Well, let's not take the worst case because that's really, let's say, you know, infidelity, that's really, but let's say your husband really did something awful. We don't need to get into details, but let's just say it's something that's just really, really got the best. What does he deserve? He deserves to be humiliated, rejected. He deserves to be punished for a long time and shame him. Tell the pastor about it. Tell all of his friends. Tell what a creep he is. That's what, from a quid pro quo justice type thing, they deserve for what they did, how badly they hurt you. The question is that how God deals with us when we do that to him? And the answer is no, that's not how he deals. He could. But so we come back and we say, what they deserve is this, but I'm not going to give them that. I want to give them something different. And the reason I'm doing this is not because I'm such a good person or such a nice person. It's because it happened for me through Jesus.
Right.
He did the same thing for me. And now I wanted to make the second nature of my own life. But marriage brings that junk out of you all the time. It tests it to the nines. By the way, it's so much fun when you're a parent now and watch your kids get married and watch them work through all the junk. And you just sit back and you laugh and get such a kick out of seeing, oh, this ought to be interesting. Oh, I wonder how this is going to play out.
Yeah. Well, and, Michelle brought up and you touched on this, that a lot of people confuse grace with being nice or being a pushover. And I mean, I can attest to the fact that, my sister Shiloh and I, both of your daughters, neither of us are pushovers.
Not at all.
If anything, our tendency is to go too far the other direction.
Maybe.
And that's the way we need to, in terms of grace in our marriage, that's the way that I think grace plays out for me, because I, am not going to take any junk off of anybody, including and probably mostly my spouse. But that's what's great about grace is it includes boundaries. Mm-hmm. It includes standards. It includes consequences when somebody does violate trust, and especially when there's a big violation of trust.
Yeah, but see, everything you're hitting on that, Karis, is all motivated by love. See, nice is not necessarily motivated by love. Unless it's self-love.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of the time it is self-love.
Yeah,
we don't want people to be mad at us.
Yeah. Or we just don't want to deal with it. Or we don't want to deal with the definition we love to use here at Grace-Based Families, that this ministry of love is that love is a commitment of my will to your needs and best interests, regardless of the cost. So raising kids, is it in their needs and best interest not to have boundaries? Well, no, they must have boundaries. Is it in their needs and best interest to have consequences? Of course. If they don't learn that, it's just a matter of time when life's going to take them out. Discipline, correction, those are all part of grace. That's an active form of grace. So now, I think the difference between grace and nice is one is human-driven and one is divine-driven. Mm. And by the way, grace can be nice, mm-hmm. but sometimes grace requires us to get in somebody's face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And say, I love you too much to allow this kind of stuff mm-hmm. to become an open-ended way of life for either of us. No,
right.
we're not going there. We got mm-hmm. and you deal with it.
Right.
But I think also grace keeps us much more honest with ourselves. That it keeps us it helps us from being so dang condescending and arrogant and looking down our nose at somebody because we recognize how much we needed it too.
Yeah.
You know, that God reached down and saved us all from being pretty big messes. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, we could get into type, you might have very presentable type sin. It's
right.
still sin.
Yeah.
And so God saves our bacon on that one because, man, we need it a lot. And then things come along in life and marriage where you just, like, for instance, I cannot stand to drive by a hat that I see on the side of the road that's been left behind. I just pity it. I feel so sorry for it. You know, it was once worn with pride and it got blown out of the back of the truck or some, you know, whatever. I hit the brakes. I go back. I rescue those hats. So, well, when Darcy found out that these very unique hats I was wearing, I rescued from the side of the road that we call them road hats. She just, you could be getting some kind of disease putting that on your head. You can't bring that in the house. Who knows where that's been? All that stuff. And we just had to work through some things because we're quirky people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I still can't bring them in the house though.
I have to wash them first. There's a sanitization process.
We all have these idiosyncrasies that we don't realize. You know, it's so funny. Darcy goes to bed every night. She wants to have a Kleenex in her hand. Mm-hmm. She wants to have it in her hand. This is from day one. Why? Well, you know, my nose, I don't know. I just feel better. I said, you fall asleep, it goes out.
Yeah.
it's somewhere loose in the bed. You would never find it. I know. And so now when we make the bed in the morning, the first thing is who finds it and grabs it first? It's a joke.
Oh, but
it's just a little idiosyncrasy. It's nothing.
Yeah.
But I could look at it through an annoying thing or just celebrated. That's my unique wife.
Yeah. I think so often it's easy to think that our way of doing things,
right,
which comes across weird to other people, mm-hmm. right? But our weird way of doing things is the right weird way. Mm-hmm. And so we often moralize things that are just differences. They're not right or wrong. They're just different. We let them annoy us, you know, and get to be a point of resentment. But, you know, in talking with parents, one of the things I say a lot is, what does grace look like played out in a home? Well, it looks like giving people as much freedom as possible.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? It's a home where sort of freedom and this culture of freedom reigns, whether that's freedom to be different, freedom to make mistakes, be vulnerable, mm-hmm. And to be candid with each other. Those are sort of the four key freedoms that we've talked about on this show a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That's true in marriage as well.
Big time.
But man, those things can get under your skin.
Well, I have a little confession. My husband is a Shark Tank fanboy. So I go to bed early. My husband will stay up and watch Shark Tank.
Shark Tank, the show, the TV show. Okay.
On ABC or whatever. Okay. Every morning, so I'm asleep, I will wake up and the computer will be open and I will see beef jerky, a weird skateboard, a squatty potty. And I know he saw it on Shark Tank and then he's researching it.
Yeah.
And in 2 to 4 weeks, that will arrive at our house. And I'm like, you are so gullible. Like, this is marketing. Do you understand? You're falling prey to this show. He's like, shut up. I am not. The squatty potty is ergonomically better for your bowels. I'm like, I am not. So anyway, we have a squatty potty. I have never used it. I trip over it every night when I get up, every morning. I hate that stupid thing. And I literally want to cancel cable so he doesn't keep watching Shark Tank. It is so annoying. But now
you can watch it on your phone though.
I was gonna say,
he'll find a way to order his weird Shark Tank things. But at first I was like, this is kind of funny. And now I'm annoyed. again, because I'm like, we don't need any more random scrub daddies or whatever this is. But anyway, those are little things that are just quirky, different. But mm-hmm. Tim, what do you do when there are big differences mm-hmm. as far as like one person wants their kids to grow up in the church, the other one isn't even a believer?
Yeah.
What if somebody's struggling with addiction? Mm-hmm. How does great, I mean, those little things, like I'm teasing my husband for being a Shark Tank addict.
Yeah.
That's okay. But when we're talking about big things, how can grace play in there? And how do boundaries come in play as well?
You know, Jesus was filled. John 1:14 says he was filled with both grace and truth. This wasn't a 50-50 deal. 100% truth, 100% grace. And an effective marriage, I'm talking about a marriage of faith, is we want to be followers of Jesus who are guided by his truth, all the while tempered by his grace. So in a marriage like that, it's going to be a tough row, mm-hmm. just because there's toxin inside this relationship. If it's an addiction or a gambling addiction or what was the other things you mentioned?
Just one like spouse is a believer and
yeah,
one is
not bringing or, yeah. to church or supporting biblical values in the home.
Our worldview, mm-hmm. radically different. Mm-hmm. And so on those kind of things, though, it's that you, as you work through them, the unique thing about our relationship with Jesus is he works through the hard things with us, but never once do you get the sense that his love for you is at risk. That as hard as this is, I'm not going to stop loving you. I'm not going to stop being committed to you. We've got some issues we got to work through. See, on the faith thing, this is why. On the front side, we say, you know, if you can be on the same page, that's better. But what happens if you came to Christ after you got married? That yeah. happens. I think on that one, though, you defer. The high ground there is to trust God to do what he can do in the children's lives and everybody's life. And you model the heart of Jesus to that person. Because if they are that troubled by the kids being in church and all that stuff, it's just going to be, you're declaring war mm-hmm. on that yeah. one. And I think there's a whole lot of other ways to get through it. But let's say it's an area of clear, you know, sin, inappropriate behavior, or an addiction that's got a hook in them. Mm-hmm. See, once again, Karis, you were talking about how you can be the least patient with a person that you love the most, you know, your husband.
Yeah.
But isn't it interesting how patient we are with other people that, let's say, have an addiction problem? Drugs are like a fish that swallowed the hook. I've done a lot of fishing. And you want to catch them here, you know, in their little mouth, and you can take it out and release them. But boy, when they swallow that hook, to get it out is so damaging to the fish. So the it gets in there. This requires a lot of patience, but it also requires boundaries, consequences. You don't accommodate. That's the painful stuff. But I think that's where a good definition of love comes to the rescue. It's a commitment of my will to your needs and best interests, regardless of the cost. If I accommodate your addiction, that's loving me, not loving you. I'm going to do the hard stuff here. Mm-hmm. But at no time do you have to worry whether I still love you.
Yeah.
And that's how God deals with that. That is not, by the way, that is not the way the standard thing plays out in a marriage, because I don't think we realize it, how transactional human love actually is. We tend to love people that love us back. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's easy. But once that love seems to be stopping from one side, it's very easy for us to justify withholding it on our side. But that's not how God does with us. And that's all we give them, the standard definition of how we say, or that one word term we use. What is grace-based parenting, grace-based marriage? It's
treating others the way that God treats us.
Yeah. That's a unique thing of what you guys are talking about in your podcast. It's simply taking these normal things that come along, or tough things, and just say, okay, how, let's deal with this situation the same way God does with us. And God does not, he's not dealing with us according to our sin, it says in the Psalms, because if he were, we'd be dead. Mm-hmm. What you say in your book on discipline, you know, God disciplines his children, but he doesn't punish them.
Yeah.
Jesus came and took our punishment. So how do we get through these things? And I just think that, but let's talk about something that's behind your question there, Michelle. I think it's very difficult to pull any of this off if you're not walking in heart relationship with Jesus yourself. Mm-hmm. The bottom line to our ministry is more than anything else. It's not so much how you treat each other. It's how your relationship with Jesus is. Because mm-hmm. the more that there you have heart connection there, the more you're going to have heart connection over here. But if you don't have heart connection with Jesus, it's just a matter of time.
Right.
When life will put a circumstantial gun to your head and your relationships that will, we're outgunned. Mm-hmm. And that's why we need the Lord.
Yeah. Well, we just come to the end of our own capacity
yep.
for kindness, for forgiveness,
sure.
for mercy, for grace. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think depending on, you know, maybe our own experiences and how we're walking with the Lord, we all sort of have different capacities for those things, but
that's exactly right.
But that's why, you know, grace is so much more the culture that we create mm-hmm. in our homes, where we then have this foundation and this background, and we're working within a framework that says, "Look, none of us deserve
yeah.
God's kindness and mercy mm-hmm. and love and all of that under the umbrella of his grace.
Yeah.
But we have received it. None of us deserve his favor."
Can I dovetail something? One standard way I love to illustrate, you may have even used this before in your show, but you talked about is the culture of the climate of the, take your family, your home. You could be doing everything right, providing well, leading well, training well, doing everything right with your kids, showing enormous love and all that stuff. But let's say though, the temperature in that house is 40 degrees all the time, but they're not wearing their coats. It's their normal clothes.
Yeah.
See, at that point, it doesn't matter how right you're doing all the truth stuff. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. They're going to have a hard time responding because they're so cold. And I think that's what grace is, brings things to a comfortable relational temperature to us to work through, even the nasty stuff. And it's just on our human default mode. We need a divine default mode.
Yeah,
that's where Jesus comes in.
You have counseled so many people and spoken with so many people over the years. What would you say is the key or a key to having a mutually satisfying marriage? I mean, you kind of hit on this with obviously a personal relationship mm-hmm. with Jesus. But in addition to that, are there things that you've seen that you're like, oh yeah, they're going to work.
Yeah.
Their marriage is really satisfying.
Well, I'll put it in, I'll say it in two different ways. It's basically the same thing, mm-hmm. but I think the thing that sets apart the marriages that go the distance is that they're making a deliberate decision every day to stay in a pursuit of the other person's heart, in pursuit of it. Winning hearts. It'd be fun to hear your stories and how you, I kind of know a little bit about Karis's and Mike's, but you and Michelle, you and Mike, how you started pursuing each other's hearts and decided to get married. But the problem with the average marriage is we get married with all this love and then life comes at us. We get married and then we start our careers and we get some bills and mortgages, kids come along and everything's fine. And next thing you know, the way I like to say it is that love story morphs into a roommate story with occasional benefits. Mm-hmm. We put up with a lot of annoying nonsense story, or at least we didn't get a divorce story. Hmm. The difference is that you maintain pursuit all the way till one takes their last breath. And that's got to be a decision, much like when you're trying to win somebody's heart before marriage. You got to make a deliberate choice about that. You got to walk, take long walks on the beach. You got to sit in the duck blind, that kind of thing. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but the other way I like to say it is maintain heart connection. Because see, people can be married and they don't realize there's no heart connection here. We were invited to a 50th anniversary for a couple who will remain nameless. And what's sad about it, you know, because I thought, well, yeah, that's a great milestone in some ways, except I knew this couple hadn't had anything even remotely close to a love story for about 45 years. Mm. They just lived the same address, made some kids. It had a few things in our highlight reel, but as far as a marriage goes, there was no love story to read. How do you get a love story out of it? Well, you stay in pursuit and keep writing it. And it sure is easier, I think, with the heart connection with Jesus that makes it play out through all the crazy stuff that we bring in each other in marriage relationships.
Yeah. And I think a key thing I heard you say there is the word choice, is that it's a choice we make, and it's a choice we have to continue to revisit and make as many times as it takes. And, you know, there are so many seasons within a you know, a lifelong relationship that, you know, there's going to be hard times. There's going to be trials. There's going to be times when you just don't feel like you like each other.
Right.
And so
right.
Feelings are good when those feelings fall into place, but they often don't. And so, you know.
I mean, Karis, listen, with any love story, you use the word seasons. Springtime, fresh love, hot summer love, that's great. But you're going to have some autumn part of that love. You're going to have some winter. Karis's mother and I have had some winter seasons in our relationship where it just seems so cold, so distant. So, here's the good news. There's a theology of seasons in the Bible, and that is you can't do anything about it. Dress appropriately.
Yeah.
Just dress appropriately.
Just dress accordingly.
Yeah. Okay. And there's one thing, if you clothe your relationship with this, it's going to be the right outfit for what, and that's God's grace.
Yeah.
It knows how to insulate us and keep us, bring us, protect us in those winter things, and we get through that stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And of course, some of the deepest winters bring up some of the greatest springtimes.
Yeah, too.
And in real life, and it can in our marriage too. It, some people listening, there, your marriage might be on life support, maybe even beyond it. Trust me, we know a lot of people who God came to the rescue, and brought their marriage back from the dead. Hmm. And it started at the foot of a cross where Jesus died to set them free. And they took that grace that he showed and actively played it out. And you guys are going to be developing what active grace in a marriage is like in the following shows. They took that. And God has done amazing things. I know one couple. He had been unfaithful. He was ready to abandon her and his boys, thinking this was the best for the boys and best for him. It was so selfish. He didn't know Jesus. He walked into our Sunday school class at church, and we started hearing the message, message. And he had bought into the success lie and the success fantasy. And then God just got a hold of him. And little by little, he started seeing, this grace is not just something that saves me. It's something that overwhelms my life when Jesus is there. And if you knew this couple, if the people listening could meet this couple, you would not believe that this couple was in that dire straits, and they are an amazing couple, deeply in love. And I think they're just amazing vessels now for God's glory.
Yeah.
So don't ever give up.
Yeah. Well, and when we're the only God we know.
Yeah.
We have no reason to recognize the true hierarchy and where we really are.
Right.
You know, in the grand scheme of the universe. And so I think that's why, you know, your friend coming to Christ, recognizing his position, you know, what it really was. Now, your position is actually in submission to God.
Right.
Whether you realize it or acknowledge it or not, but now he's acknowledging it, and it gives at least a framework for the type of selflessness that marriage takes.
Yeah.
And it is a lot of selflessness. I mean, mm-hmm. This is a confessional.
Yeah.
For me, it's yeah. continually choosing to sort of die to myself. Mm-hmm. And to kind of, you know, you go through a personal autumn.
Right.
A lot of times where, you know, that you got to shed these leaves so that you can get some new growth going on. Mm-hmm. And so I just think that's key. And we will flesh more of this out. I think talking about some communication on some future shows would be good because mm-hmm. that is such a key to being able to pursue each other's hearts and maintain that love story long term. It means drawing near to each other when our instinct is to diverge.
Right.
Right. Choosing to sort of enter into the messiness of that heart connection. Mm-hmm. So we'll go further than that. But, you know, if you had one last word to share with our listeners, Dad, you know, what would you say? Especially maybe some who are struggling right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, sometimes we come into marriage and, We're walking with some serious limps from how we were raised or mm-hmm. experiences we've been through before. God knows what that's like. But for the people, I think, that are really struggling, here's the difference between, like that couple we were talking about that came into our class. They were both very wounded people, very wounded. And as long as they were to stay in their wounded condition, they didn't have a chance.
Yeah.
But when they finally surrendered, and they didn't surrender simultaneously, he came first, she mm-hmm. came, whatever, but they surrendered and they moved to a position of brokenness. What you were talking about, dying to self. And that difference is the difference between defeat or victory. Mm-hmm. If I stay wounded, I'm defeated. But if I get broken before Christ mm-hmm. and recognize he is the solution here. It's his power. It's his mercy. It's his forgiveness that we can now embrace for our own life and the mess we've made and then start to let him come through us. In fact, I like to put it this way. We would think, let me talk to people out there that are, you would say, I'm clearly a follower of Jesus. Okay, great. So, and you'd think, okay, I love God and I want to take my love for God, and I want to show that to my spouse. I want to give that to my spouse. I want to pour that over my spouse. That sounds like a great idea, but that is not the biblical plan. That is not the gospel plan. See if this makes more sense. It's not my love for God I want to give to my spouse. It's God's love for me. Mm-hmm. I want to be given. And how's that come? It's coming through me rather than from me. And the reason I don't want to do that, give it from me, is because Tim Kimmel's love has got limitations. Michelle Brooks, Karis Murray's, you've got limits to it. Mm-hmm. His doesn't.
Yeah.
And but what does that assume? That assumes I am in pursuit of his heart. Mm-hmm. And as he's coming through me, then now we're in a position to start working through all this dangerous, messy junk mm-hmm. that we've allowed to come into our. And by the way, I think that's what God gave us a church for.
Yeah.
Trying to do this solo. God says, come on. I've got people out there. And don't be afraid to go to a good godly counselor. But don't go to a counselor who just wants to talk about your problems all the time. Go to a counselor who wants to solve the problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See victory there.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I know for me, it's been encouraging. I've been learning more about the grace-based message for 7 to 10 years now, when I first started in a small group that we did a video study with you. And I think for me, and then also ministering all my marriage, but also ministering to my friends, when you allow God's grace to take center stage in your life, which I know that's your phrase, it can really bring hope and healing to some broken places.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I just use that as an encouragement to my friends and family that are going through hard seasons and hard marriages. But I think the key is what you said, is you have to allow God's grace to take center stage. We can't do this in our own power. Mm-mm. And I just think it's awesome that for over 4 decades, this message has really been transformative in a lot of people's families and marriages. And we're excited to see what the next generation of families looks like.
Yeah. Well, we really appreciate you taking the time with us today. Dad.
Well, thanks. I'm excited about you, young voices. I mean, what you guys are doing on this podcast and the quirky way you guys bring your own lives out here is so much fun and refreshing. But there is a wonderful, you guys are a great voice to this new generation. I've had my turn. It's time for people like you to step up there, and I'm very proud of you all.
Well, with fear and trepidation, thank you. Yes, we appreciate that, and we appreciate our listeners as well. So thanks for joining us today on the Grace-Based Families podcast. If we can pray for you, we would love to do so. If you have questions, comments, if you have things you'd like to hear us talk about on future shows, we want to talk about what you want to talk about. We want to kind of walk alongside this with you. And so reach out to us at family@gracebasedfamilies.com. And we would love to engage with you. So thanks so much for joining us today. Thank you, Dr. Kimmel. Yes,
and
thanks, Michelle.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Grace-Based Families podcast. This is part of Grace-Based Families Ministry.
For more resources, check us out on gracebasedfamilies.com/podcast or stream us on all major podcasting platforms.
Once again, this is Karis
and Michelle.
Until next time.